Welcome to Savvy Business, Life Unscripted with your host, Christina Rivera, where our guests share their wisdom and valuable business tips, empowering our audience to expand their personal potential.
Hello, Warren Farrell. Welcome to Savvy Broadcasting Life Unscripted. I'm so grateful to have you here today. How are you?
I'm doing really well, despite the COVID, right?
Yes. Right now, we are recording this. We had a bit of technical difficulty getting on up here, but Skype came to the rescue, and we're here today to talk about your wonderful book, The Boy Crisis. I thought it was a fascinating topic and book. You don't even realize there is a problem, but you found that there's something that could be addressed and make lives better for everyone, families and boys and girls and everyone. So share with our audience first, what even brought you to writing your book, The Boy Crisis?
Well, I started out my career in the 70s and the late 60s, actually, being deeply involved with the women's movement. I was on the board of directors of the National Organization for Women in New York City, spoke all around the world on behalf of the importance of women being involved with businesses and being able to spend as much of their life as they wish to scale a corporate ladder, break a glass ceiling. This was before the word glass ceiling was invented. And so we were very supportive of that. And then during the 70s, I began to see the divorces increase a great deal. Mm-hmm. And with those divorces, I started to see the original research or some of the early research that showed that the children of divorce were having problems. But then as I looked more deeply into that research, mm-hmm. I saw it wasn't all the children of divorce that were having problems. It was particularly the boys that had minimal or no father involvement after divorce that uh-huh. were having problems. And then I started seeing that these boys were doing worse in this area than that area. And ultimately, I was able to detect more than 50 different developmental areas, from suicide to depression to uh-huh. addiction to video games, to addiction to porn, to the boys not doing well in school, not doing mm-hmm. well emotionally, not knowing, being aggressive but not assertive, not having empathy, mm-hmm. Being disobedient, mm-hmm. and I started looking at what's the common denominators, and again and again, I found that the single most powerful of the 10 most important causes was that the boy crisis resides basically where dads do not reside. Mm. So I was seeing it wasn't all boys of divorce.
Yeah.
It was mostly the boys and girls of divorce who had minimal or no father involvement.
Yeah.
And it wasn't all the children being raised by single moms, but it was particularly the children being raised by single moms where the children didn't know who the dad was, or the children knew who the dad was, but he was minimally or in the children's life. Mm-hmm. Or alternatively, the mother and father were living together but not married when the child was born, but those relationships only lasted an average of 3 years. And so many of the children, especially the boys, felt abandoned by their dad. Mm. And I started to see that the impact on boys was a lot worse than it was on girls, that it mm-hmm. was a negative impact on girls in almost all mm-hmm. 50 of the developmental areas that was true for boys, but that the intensity of that impact was much greater for boys. So, for example,
mm-hmm. Why do you think boys in particular are affected more than girls? I would think both of them. Why? Because I think a father figure is important for both males and females.
Mm-hmm. It is definitely important for both girls and boys, and boy and girls are negatively affected in more than these 50 developmental areas also.
Yeah.
But boys, girls at least have, with a single mother, a same-sex role model, and they have much more social permission to cry, express their feelings, say what's bothering them, so the mother can identify that, or the guidance counselor, or the therapist in college, let's say. Mm-hmm. 75% of people that visit therapists reporting suicidal ideations in college are females. 25% are males, but 75% of the suicides in college are males. And so women tend to report their problems, men tend to repress their problems. And so that makes it even worse for boys than it is for girls. And so I started seeing that, for example, boys and girls at the age of 9, they rarely commit suicide, and they commit suicide at equal rates to each other. between the ages of 10 and 14, mm-hmm. the rate for our sons is double the rate for our daughters. Mm-hmm. Between the ages of 15 and 19, it's quadruple the rate for our daughters. Between the ages of 20 and 25, it is five times the rate for our daughters. Wow. Then it levels out to four times. Mm-hmm. But then as men and women get much older, the rate soars for men. So for men and women over 85, the suicide rate for our grandfathers is 1,750% more frequent than it is for our grandmothers. Because, you know, males, go ahead.
Now, I'm curious, because now you're an adult. Why would, when you're, you know, at that point, you're an advanced adult, you think, and you wouldn't have any issues from not having a dad that's like so far down in the past. Why does that impact you so much as an adult?
Yes, you oftentimes boys that don't have a lot of father involvement, they don't have a sense of purpose beyond traditional senses of purpose, and the traditional senses of purpose have shifted a great deal. So, for example, in history, every generation had its war, and in every generation's war, both mothers, fathers, society, girlfriends, everybody said, you know, if you go off to that war and you risk being disposable in war, your disposability would lead you to be called a hero. And so we gave you a social bribe, if you will, to be disposable. And we called that masculinity. And so the bad news was that many, many more males were disposable. The good news was that these men felt a sense of purpose with each generation. Now a much smaller percentage of boys and young men are needed for war. So we have a much smaller percentage of males that have that purpose. But, you know, the good news is that fewer have to die. The bad news is that there's a purpose void. And what I discovered when I did the research for the boy crisis is that that when you have a purpose void combined with a dad void,
wow.
that's when the boy feels like his testosterone does not get channeled well and with a purpose. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't get channeled with postponed gratification. That is, dads are far more likely than moms mm-hmm. to... dads and moms both express unconditional love for their children,
yeah.
but moms are more likely to have unconditional love with close to unconditional approval. Mm-hmm. Dads are much more likely to have unconditional love with much more conditional approval. Mm-hmm. Sweetie, I know you got straight A's, but you haven't been turning your papers in. Mm-hmm. That's not okay. You know, mm-hmm. oh, what are you complaining about? He's gotten straight A's.
Yeah.
You know, would be a more likely a difference. And then so the children without dads mm-hmm. tend to have less discipline. They have less mm-hmm. sense of purpose. Therefore, their smaller amount of discipline mm-hmm. leads to less ability to have postponed gratification, which means less ability to succeed in school, succeed on the basketball team, succeed in whatever their dream is. Mm-hmm. And then they become, the males in particular, start to become ashamed of themselves. And then when they are interested in girls, they notice that girls are not very interested in dating losers.
Yeah,
they tend to date winners. And mm-hmm. so then the guys feel rejected. So they turn to porn. They mm-hmm. get addicted to the porn. The addiction to the porn makes them feel like they don't have any type of real ability to be attractive to women, which then mm-hmm. gets them addicted to porn and so on. And so this is just one of the 50 developmental areas that males that are creating the boy crisis.
Wow. And now I'm wondering, you had mentioned here the void of purpose leads to a whole bunch of problems, including behavioral. Does it also sometimes lead to violence and making decisions that probably aren't the best in your life?
Yes, two things. So when I did a study of the school shooters, we found that 100% of the school shooters in the 21st century who killed 10 or more people were fatherless boys. Well, we look at the prison population. You see, of course, 93% males, but that most people know. But what they don't know is that most of those 93% males, about 90% of those 93% males, are males who are without fathers.
Yeah.
The ISIS recruits, three female sociologists studied ISIS recruits, and they told them each other afterwards, huh, a lot of my group happened to mention that they didn't have much of a father involvement. Wow. All three female sociologists said, yeah, that came up in my group too, but they hadn't even asked that question. So they went back and asked that question and found out that that was the single greatest predictor of joining ISIS, because they didn't have purpose and ISIS gave them a sense of purpose. And even though the purpose was destructive, et cetera, et cetera. And we saw this with Jerome Powell, the Federal Reserve Chair. He said he said on 60 Minutes some months ago that when you look at the economic, the business future and capacity of America, it is threatened by two potential crises. One is cyber warfare, and number two is boys' lack of basically the boy crisis. Boys not doing well economically. And boys aren't doing well economically when those boys don't have fathers, then they're more likely to drop out of high school. The ones that drop out of high school, 20%+ unemployment in their early 20s. And obviously that unemployment leads to destructive rather than constructive behavior. Almost all your crimes are committed by these fatherless boys. And again, fatherlessness is only one of 10 causes of the boy crisis, but it is by far the biggest cause.
And you know what's interesting I'm hearing from you, Dr. Farrell, is that this doesn't just affect boys. This affects our entire culture and society, because if boys are having an issue, if they can't rise to the table, feel purpose, and feel reason for even living, forget about being doing behaviors that might not be beneficial to themselves and society, this will hurt the entire country and the entire world. It's a much bigger issue than just hitting boys.
You are absolutely right. So, for example, when between my marriages, I was single for a while, and I soon found that the more mature people the more mature females were women who had children, and so I dated a number of women that had children. But the word that was used by these women with children, single mothers, was almost always the word overwhelmed. I'm just overwhelmed. I can't do business well. I can't do the kids well. I feel like a failure. I'm exhausted all the time. You know, I'd love to have sex with you, but sorry.
I'm too tired.
And so that's the thing. And I didn't really mean to say that, but anyway.
No, no, it's true. Right. It's real life. It's real life.
Exactly.
Go on.
So the women are overwhelmed who are single mothers. The fathers feel without purpose and discarded. And the children are feeling like they don't have the discipline to achieve their dreams. They're losing in every academic area. Boys all around the world in the most 50 developed countries, the 56 most developed countries, boys in all of those countries are doing worse than girls in every single academic subject, but especially in reading and writing, which are the two biggest predictors of success or failure. They're doing worse economically. They're doing worse psychologically. That you mentioned the anger and the violence. The anger and the violence is far. You can imagine the school shooters. Going back on that, they don't have the discipline. They're failing in school. They dropped out. They're ashamed of themselves. They're angry at their teachers, angry at their parents for respecting the other, the other brother or sister better, like East of Eden. They go ahead and they feel really badly about women, because they're told by their mothers that women love sensitive men, but they find that that's really not true unless the man is successful and then sensitive, right? Lois Lane fell in love with not with Clark Kent, but with Superman. And then once she fell in love with Superman, she wanted Superman to express his feelings, but she didn't give a darn about what Clark Kent did or didn't express. And so,
isn't that interesting? We don't think about that. It's true. Yeah. It's totally true. Now, you know what I'm getting here that is probably missing? Now, I grew up with a family that had some issues, violence and such, but I had most of my childhood had both parents. And even though it was dysfunctional, having the both parents there, I felt like I came out better than my brother and sister, who later on, when my dad and mom got divorced, my youngest brother and sister, who were born only after I was 14, they suffered and had a much more difficult childhood and then moving into adulthood than I did. And so this brings to point the traditionality of family and how it's kind of like, well, you know, you don't have to do the boy male thing. You know, we don't need a male and a female in the house. We could just mix it up and do whatever we want, or just have a woman just run everything. And as you know, I'm starting to hear here that there's nothing, you know, the back to traditionality and the actual family unit isn't such a bad thing. We both have our gifts, the male energy and the female energy, to bring to the table to help our kids grow.
Absolutely correct. And this is what I found. And this has, of course, got me in trouble with the feminist movement because, you know, I was, I believe I was the leading male feminist in the world and was speaking on these issues purely from a feminist perspective. And, if women should be able to be free to do what they want to do. But I started to see that, yes, women should be free, but they wanted to do what they wish to do. But if they make the free choice to have children, then they make the free choice to say, my children's lives are the most important thing in my life. I don't have to make that choice. I can focus on business or do whatever I wish to do. But once I make that choice, with that free choice comes responsibilities. Yeah. And so then I started to see that the children with mothers and fathers did so much better, especially the boy children. Mm-hmm. And I started mentioning this to my board members in the National Organization for Women in New York City. And they looked at me like, wait a minute, Warren, this is going to interfere with women's freedom to be able to do what they want to do. And I said, but don't you want the next generation of girls as well as boys to turn out well? And, I said that we're all in the same family boat when only one sex wins, both sexes lose. Mm-hmm. We want our daughters to have men who are worthy of their love to marry. Mm-hmm. Daughters don't marry losers. If men become losers, your daughters are going to be single, not by choice, but single by sort of lack of choice, and they sort of agreed with that on one hand, but they said, "Gee, we can't afford. We have a lot of fish to fry here politically. We have equal pay and violence against women, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And we have to fry all these fish. We need the largest membership possible. We cannot afford to come out in favor of reducing the choices that some of our women have." And so that's where I began to break with the feminist movement. And even though I was more politically liberal, it was the Republicans that were saying, we have been saying for years that if family is important and fathers are an important part of that family. Yeah. And fathers are definitely not the only important thing. My research for the boy crisis found that that the children that did best are ones that had what I call checks and balance parenting. Where, so for example, a child approaches a mom and says, "Mom, can I climb the tree in the backyard?" And mom goes, "Well, maybe in a few years, honey, but not right now." And dad goes, dad asks separately, goes, "Yeah, be careful though." And and then mom and dad find out that the other one has said the opposite, and the child gets caught. And so then mom and dad get into a big discussion, like, what do you want to do? This child could fall and get a concussion and be ruined for life. And the dad goes, but, if you protect the child completely, they won't be able to develop the intellectual power of being able to decide what decisions are risk appropriate with what decisions aren't. They get into a big argument, and maybe the mom and dad go, "Okay, I'll tell you what. The child can climb the tree, but not beyond this level, not these branches. And dad, you've got to be out there under the tree and take it to cushion the child's fall if the child does fall. And by the way, give me the cell phone." So the parents, if they don't understand what's going on, may think that they're just parents that are bad parents because if I only married a woman or a man that thought differently like I did. Yeah. No. It's really important that the mom thinks the way the mom thinks and the dad thinks it the way they think, and you negotiate a win-win situation so the child gets the ability to climb that tree, but also gets the ability to, which, by the way, very few dads understand, that climbing that tree will increase the child's IQ, the child's ability to make the synapses start firing that make decisions as to what risk is worth taking, what risk isn't worth taking, requiring a type of intelligence that the child didn't have before. That of course gets transplanted into adult life where you learn automatically to make those types of decisions more perfectly. So important it is that I find the families that do the best not only have checks and balanced parenting, but they know the guidelines for family dinner nights that allow family dinner nights to be consistent, but prevent family dinner nights from becoming family dinner nightmares. And I found this so important that the you know, the first appendix of the Boy Crisis book is completely about how to structure a family dinner night so that it becomes successful, so the children are more excited to have dinners with the family than they are to have their electronics at the table, so that the parents learn how to listen to the children, not interrupt and lecture the children, so that the children know how to listen to the parents, because they've already been listened to, and it's not an argument. It's the ability to hear different points of view without feeling that one has to triumph over the other. And so there's so many things that need to be done on a family level, on a school level. The children that go from female-only homes to female adult-only schools, they are there without role models. Males that go from female-only homes to female-only schools are without male role models. And they're the ones that are attracted to gang leaders and drug dealers who are authoritarian personalities who will say, but you belong to this gang. You'll feel good about yourself.
You'll belong to something greater than yourself. That's what we're looking for. Something to make a change. Yeah. And what you mentioned here about having a check and balance household is that now the kids get to see the two parents in negotiation. You then learn the skills of negotiation, what it looks like, and also for themselves, how would I negotiate later on for myself and dealings I might have with the public. And here's the thing I think the NOW Association was missing, the feminist organization you were working with was missing, is that when you come at it from this perspective, you're not losing feminist power, you're gaining it, because with responsibility, you actually are empowered. When you begin to look at responsibility, it's not, you're taking away stuff from me because now I can't do all the things I want. Everything you do in life will have a consequence. And actually, if you come at it from a perspective of responsibility, you're actually empowering yourself.
Totally. First of all, really empowering women is having women be happy. So many women that I've worked with, they say, I want to be a have-it-all woman. It's not fair that men can be have-it-all men and that women can't be have-it-all women. Mm-hmm. And I go, actually, you can be a have-it-all woman. You can be a have-it-all woman by focusing on your career and finding a man, the type of man who wants to focus on raising children. But in order to be a have-it-all woman and be happy, you have to respect the man who wants to raise children full time, because if you don't respect him, he'll feel your lack of respect, and that will lead to a divorce. But if you respect and want and choose for a man at a party, for example, when you choose a man, don't choose the man who's the dominant player at the party, the future doctor. Choose a man who knows how to listen, who knows how to draw out a woman, who knows how to draw you out, who's secure enough internally to be able to be a nurturer, if that's also his personality. Choose and fall in love with that man, and you will then find that he'll be appropriate for raising your children, secure enough to do that, as long as he knows you love him. And so, so that is an example of, what I would say to my feminist friends. And some of them, a number just poo-pooed it. But some did take me up on that and married men that they're very happy with, raising children that, where the man is focused more on raising the children, but the woman is free to move up the corporate ladder.
Yeah. And I actually know someone like that. They have two wonderful children and it worked out for them. The man loves staying home with the kids. It worked out very well. And she's, I believe, an attorney. And they made this partnership and agreement before they got married. And that's one thing that's important, is actually lay it down on the table ahead of time before you even decide to do the marriage or getting together. Because now you have everything worked out. The agreement is, you're going to do this, I'm going to do this. We're not like, walking down the aisle and then later on going, I'll do this, I'll do that, and then change things later on. Both feel jilted at the, I got to stay home with the kids and I didn't want to do that.
Yes, absolutely. And there, by the way, if this version of the world, if this source of options is of interest to you, take a real careful read about, if you're single, what are the signals of the type of woman or man that will be willing to do this? Where is the gap between the theory and the practice? How do you discern that before you get married? What are the signs of a partner being flexible, so that in case a man or woman loses a job, they know how to row from both sides of the family boat? And so there are so many dimensions of this that are so important. I'm working with the White House now to try to get them to talk. I've done a first draft of a potential presentation for President Trump to make on Father's Day if the coronavirus disappears enough to be able to focus on that. And the and you know one of the things that I'm talking with them about is the creation of a father warrior program where we're saying to men, be a different type of warrior than you were in the past. Instead of being trained to kill and be killed, now we need men to love and be loved at home, as well as to kill and be killed, as well as to be the traditional hero. But we need also to add respect for men who are a different type of hero to the family.
Yes. I love that you mentioned this, Dr. Farrell, because I recall recently, I don't watch TV. I don't own a TV, but I recently
really?
Went on it. For quite a while, I haven't owned a TV, but we went on a holiday recently and I was in the hotel and we shifted on the TV and the commercials. Whoa. And some of the things I watched, there was so much disrespect towards men and the male to masculinity, and they're calling toxic. These are just men being men, and they were kind of in these commercials and these shows, kind of teasing men about being male. And I was like, well, what is wrong with these people? It was like just being a man or being manly was like wrong or evil, and let's make fun of them, and then let's make women more manly. And I'm like, dude, what's wrong with just being feminine? I like being feminine. I like dressing up in makeup and going out and being feminine. But it's like some of these stereotypes are almost being portrayed on programming, aka TV, as a means of being wrong. So let's do this propaganda TV shows and commercials to show people that we can switch roles or make fun of men and not be men and have women be men. When no, you're a woman and that's totally awesome. And if you're a little bit more climbing trees, that's awesome too. That's what you like to do. But hey, if you're a man that likes to be nurturing, cool also. But if you're a man that's masculine and wants to go and chop wood, that's also okay.
Absolutely. We need every type of man and woman. And we do need, you know, where I think the political liberals are right, is that we need to allow both men and women to discover themselves, to find out what their unique self is. Yeah. And if the man is more nurturing, reward that. If the man is more a firefighter or a future military person, reward that. The same with the women in reverse. Absolutely. And so that's where that openness to becoming who you are, that is the privilege that we have as a result of our parents and our grandparents having gotten us to the level where survival is not so dominant. Historically speaking, we did not, what I explained in the Boy Crisis book is that it was not that we were controlled by a patriarchy. We were controlled rather by the need to survive. And the patriarchy did not make rules to benefit men at the expense of women. The need to survive led to roles that led to men being willing to die so women would live, and being willing to create laws that require males to register for the draft at the age of 18. That law, which exists today, is not about male privilege. It's about male responsibility and male sacrifice. Mm-hmm. And so we have boys going through school who are seeing, on the one hand, the future is female. And then secondly, you know, I have to register for the draft at age 18. But if I register for the draft at age 18 and my female friend does not register, I'm told I have male privilege. And then women are more interested in me if I earn more money, and especially they want me to earn money if they have children and they want the option to raise the children or raise money or do some combination of both. But I'm expected to raise the money, so I have to give up my teaching, which I love to do because it doesn't pay as much as being a principal or a superintendent of schools, or I have to give up being a musician because I don't get enough gigs to support my wife and three children. So as a result of giving up those gigs and selling insurance, which pays more money than being a musician, I'm earning more money. And now I'm blamed for earning more money when, in fact, I sacrifice the things I love to do, the things that were fulfilling for me to earn more money. So these are the dilemmas that our sons are in. They say, and then they see the commercials that you were just describing. And those commercials are showing every dad is a bumbling fool or
idiot.
So on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
so on.
I was like, what is this?
So, you know, what do you expect a boy to say? What can I do? You know, if I earn money, I'm accused of having the power. If I don't earn money, women are I'm invisible to women. If I move too quickly sexually, I'm a date rapist or violated affirmative consent. If I don't move quickly enough, I'm called a wimp. If I make sure of myself by asking the woman to sign a piece of paper saying, is it okay for me to kiss you now? And she signs it saying yes. She looks at me like there's something wrong with me. Which,
it's like you're in a no-win situation.
And this is 16, 15, 14-year-old boys who are biologically less mature than the females they're interested in. And so it's sort of like, so we're asking the less mature sex to do all these risks when the more mature sex, who has less interest in sex and therefore has the power, is not expected to do this. And so, and boys don't express their feelings and talk about these things. And so you can imagine what's going on that leads to boys committing suicide.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, when I grew up, now my dad was very tough on all of us. He used to say, if I hurt my foot, you got another one, use that. Now, he do that to both my brother and myself. But I did recall that they were tougher on my brother about, you know, showing his feelings. So we're kind of conditioned, you're a boy, stop crying. And, you know, whereas my dad would say, you hurt your foot, use your other one, to both of us. He would not like him, or he would get hard on my brother if he expressed upset or crying, that type of thing, where it was okay for a girl. So you're making it a no-win situation for boys, and it's not helpful to anyone. So yeah, I really hope this opens up the dialogue for everyone listening in to think differently and open your mind to how we might help all of ourselves, as you said, be our best potential, grow, and see how we can help our kids grow to our fullest potential and not be stuck in boxes.
Yes.
Get rid of the boxes. No more boxes. Well, I have to thank you, Dr. Farrell, for coming today to share your great wisdom and your book, The Boy Crisis. I really appreciate it. Where can they get a copy today?
Amazon is the least expensive place. And of course, if you have a bit more money, then going to a local bookstore. And I have to say the Audible version of the book is getting extraordinary response, much more so than I had ever expected. I spent 5 days in studio reading it, and John Gray, the co-author of a portion of the book, read his portion of it as well. And people are responding, driving or, you know, listening to it on a machine. They're really responding very well to the Audible version.
That's great. So you've got many options. Not everyone is, their time is usually really rapid right now. Not so much, but, you know, when you're on to work or going to work or exercising, great time to read or listen to your book. And I thank you for coming to Savvy Broadcast to share your great wisdom today. Thank you.
Oh, I loved being interviewed by you. You're such a good question asker, and you have such a vibrancy to you. So thank you.
Thank you. If you like this episode, please share. To hear more savvy episodes and savvy biz tips, go to lifeunscriptedradio.com. To become a guest or participate in paid sponsorship, email us at christina@lifeunscriptedradio.com.